Your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are. Welcome to Tuesday afternoon, everyone. We're a little bit late, so we're going to jump right into it. John Najarian is on the phone line watching Wall Street. And I was watching John on the halftime report not too long ago on CNBC. He also comes from the Najarian family office and helps us understand Wall Street a little bit. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Great to be here, Stephen. Thank you.
So we're pretty much at New Year's Day, right? I mean, from what I'm reading, the Dow has just slipped in or is just barely positive for the year. We're kind of where we started the year?
Correct. After the rally, that whatever 8-day rally that we had last week into this week, we basically made it into positive territory. Today we've eased back, but nonetheless, it's a lot better feeling overall in the market than it was during either those February or March lows.
What are we looking at today for the drop? Concerns over the interest rates, or what is it that's leading to it?
That's exactly it. But that's a good thing in my mind, Stephen. We made a rather sharp move in interest rates from the trading standpoint. From a consumer standpoint, they can't even see it or feel it.
Mm-hmm.
But as a trader, and or as those who are in fixed income would say, this is a fairly large move going from 3 to 306 in rates. But nonetheless, we've done it before this year, popped over 3, that is. And it's a question of, do we just keep leapfrogging like this? Most of us would say no. But we had very strong Empire manufacturing results today. We had some pretty good retail sales numbers that indicate that the Fed's target for inflation could be reached. And again, those are good things. Those are happy problems. You just don't want to see interest rates move up too dramatically, too quickly. We all know they're going up. As long as they go up at a measured pace, we're fine.
Let's talk about Home Depot. They were out, I think, with an earnings report earlier today, and they're blaming the weather. I wish I could blame the weather, John.
Well, retailers can always blame the weather because, you know, except for Amazon, we have to go out to visit them.
Right.
And so when the weather's bad, we're not going out as often. Also, some of those retailers, if you're in an area that actually had warmer than expected weather this winter, like in Colorado and other parts, maybe those retailers didn't sell as much of the winter clothing as they anticipated. And in Chicago, maybe they did make up for it somewhat, but they couldn't get out to the retailers, so they were buying the cold weather gear online.
So, but
whatever the problem is.
And I'm sorry, in Home Depot's case, you know, they said their earnings were down a little bit because it was a longer winter and people didn't go and do their spring shopping. That would imply that we're still going to go do our spring shopping and that they're going to be okay, right? I mean, if we didn't spend the money in April that we typically do, doesn't that mean we'll spend it in May or in early June? Or is that just lost revenue for them?
No, I think you're right. It's the latter. It's not lost revenue for them. Rather, the former.
Sure.
I'm sorry, Steve.
That's okay.
It's not lost revenue for them. It's delayed spending. Much like you pull forward demand when you offer a rebate on automobiles, I think if the weather pushes things out, doesn't mean people aren't going to put down mulch and buy plants and all the rest at Home Depot. It means that the weather wasn't conducive to it, and it's just a delayed purchase, I believe.
I want to ask you as well about Agilent Technologies. I'm not sure I know much about that company, but I see that they're having a rough day.
Yeah, spinoff, I believe, out of AT&T, right? Bell Labs? Shoot, I forget which. But it's Agilent, nonetheless, is a spinoff out of a bigger company. And for whatever reason this time, as much as I like tech, and Agilent is certainly in tech, these guys are not one of them like many of the semiconductor stocks like NXPI and Advanced Micro Devices. This one isn't hitting it as hard, and this earnings report reflected that, and some people were hitting the sell button.
That's John Najarian. John, you got a tip for an idea for us today?
Sure. We were buying Netflix again today. We've been in it for a long time. We've been buying more of it here, and there was a very big trade that went off, implying that the stock could go pretty up another 15 to 20% through the summer. So we chased in along with that in NFLX.
Now, you know, I was hoping you were going to say Netflix. I saw some of the show this morning, and it fascinates me. You know, I do a number of the week every Friday and try to pick some statistic or whatsoever, but I'm looking at Netflix and the amount of money, the percentage of money that they have that they're spending on their original programming this year compared to buying access to other programming is a big shift. I mean, I think they're doing great things there.
Yep, they are. They're becoming a true studio, much like Amazon or even, for that matter, Disney or Fox. They're getting a lot of hits out of these shows that they've put on. And that's manna from heaven for the shareholders over at Netflix, because obviously their own content, they don't have to pay as much for it, and they own it. So they could actually redistribute it forever.
They can charge me to watch it over and over and over again.
Exactly, sir.
John Najarian, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it. We'll do it again next Tuesday.
Thank you, Stephen.
John Najarian, follow him on Wall Street, on Twitter, I should say, at John Najarian, of course, from the Najarian Family Office as well.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right, who knew J.D. Power actually does a study of your water system? And they're out with their third annual study. Andrew Heath is on a phone line. He's the Senior Director of Utility Practice at J.D. Power. Andrew,
hi,
welcome.
Steve. Glad you're able to join you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you joining us as well. Okay, I'm going to start just with a little surprise. I didn't know you guys had your eyes on the utilities. I was looking at cars, bikes, refrigerators, things like that.
You know, it's interesting. It's almost half of our business is things outside the auto area. So we've been looking in utilities, doing research for 20 years for electric and natural gas. And then 3 years ago, we started looking at the feedback customers have about their water utilities.
And for whom do you do this? I'm assuming the water companies, they're the one, the interested party here.
Yeah, it's a combination. I mean, the main people we will work with directly are then the water utilities themselves. So what we're able to do is survey customers across the nation, get the feedback from those customers, and then use that to better understand, you know, what's working, and then help water utilities better understand where they might be able to improve service and, you know, what actually matters to customers. What are the things that the customers think about?
So the idea is that a water company in Central Illinois, say Aqua, can learn from how a water company in Northern California deals with its clients, its customers. What works there might work here.
That's exactly it, Steve. And one of the benefits of doing a benchmarking study across the whole nation, you've got the exact same survey that people have taken in California or Illinois. So you can see who's doing best on certain areas, just like you said, and then you can start looking at, well, heck, what is it that's going on in California that might help in Illinois? Or the case you mentioned, Aqua actually is one of the top performers across the nation for conservation. So you're often finding things like that as you start delving into the customer data.
No kidding. Aqua in Illinois has that reputation.
Actually, it's Aqua down in the south.
Oh, yeah, okay,
they
okay.
do particularly well.
Okay.
Yeah.
It strikes me that water is one of those things that's kind of magical that it shows up. I mean, there are some very infamous cases where it's bad, but for the most part, it's pretty good. But it's also one of those things we tend to complain about. So when I see that 30% of your respondents have some sort of water quality complaint, I almost feel like that's kind of low.
That's interesting. Yeah, and it's interesting because everyone on the industry focuses on making sure that we all have safe water. So you can go to public records, EPA data, and you'll see that there's actually very few instances where there's any health violations or monitoring violations. But as you said, when you ask customers, we've got more to say. We talk about things like the color, the taste, the hardness of the water, maybe how it impacts our appliances. I think what's fascinating is you get huge variations. Yeah, there are some areas across the nation, the Northeast, that naturally just has clearer water that people typically give higher ratings to. Unfortunately, the Midwest, Illinois, naturally some of the water that is there is more likely to be harder water that's causing people problems.
How did we do in Chicago? How did we rank?
Chicago, for the cities, was behind the average within the Midwest. So you know, there's certainly some room for improvement for City of Chicago, but not the lowest in our rankings. And, actually, Cleveland was the area that had the lowest scores.
Well, that's fitting, isn't it? Poor Cleveland, the butt of another joke.
There you go.
So what do utility companies, what did you learn? How do they deal with their clients to make them more satisfied? It looks like it's all about communication.
That's a good observation, Steve. I think that's one of the areas that there's the greatest opportunity to improve. People, when we survey them, they want to know more about what is going on with their water. It's an area where people get very, very passionate about it. Yeah. So that passion translates into them wanting to know more. And the more the water utility can do to explain what's happening, explain what the utility is doing to improve the water, maybe improve the infrastructure, all of those things are things that people really appreciate hearing more about.
Andrew Heath from JD Power. Andrew, great to talk to you today. Thank you very much.
So good to talk to you.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It's 12:37 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Suzanne Buchan is in the studio. She is the co-host of The Big Payoff, the podcast you hear here at WGNradio.com and elsewhere. Suzanne, thanks for coming back.
Thank you, Steve, for having me back.
Okay, I don't know where to start because, you know, when we Bennett gave us the cue that we were coming back on air and he told us to keep our clothes on.
All of our clothes on.
Right, which I guess leads to Cornell University.
This is such a good story. It was like made for our segment, actually.
Yeah, I want you to explain it to me because I'm not sure I do understand.
Okay, so a young woman at Cornell is giving the rehearsal for her senior thesis. So let's just be clear. This isn't her senior thesis, but she's in a class. And as she comes to her rehearsal, she shows up in what is described as a button-down denim shirt and, quote, short shorts.
Right.
At which point her professor, who's a woman, says to her, are those shorts appropriate? You know, aren't those shorts a little bit too short? And there is a rule, and it's in the handbook, that says that students are supposed to dress appropriately for the persona they will be presenting in their thesis. But this isn't her thesis.
This is her practice.
It's her practice. A lot of hubbub ensues. There's a lot of, as you can imagine, at a liberal university, should someone have commented on her clothing? Isn't that a little, you know, sexist? And it gets into such a big kerfuffle on the campus that when said student eventually shows up to give her actual thesis.
So she goes out. So when it's her actual thesis, that's when this happens?
Yes. Okay. So now she arrives back at class a couple of days later to give her actual thesis. And when she does, she strips down.
Everybody strips, she says.
She says everybody strips, and she actually proceeds to give her senior thesis at Cornell in her bra and underwear. And of the class of 44, she asks that others do the same. And in fact, you know, several others did.
And the teacher said she was just,
she had gotten permission to do it. It's interesting. She was wise enough to have gotten permission, or at least have contacted some other powers that be at Cornell and said, look, I'm going to do this.
Right.
Is this okay?
Right. What do you make of this?
Well, no, Steve, what do you make of this?
I think I have an objection with the teacher in one. I understand the teacher. I sympathize with the teacher. I think if you're presenting yourself, then you should say, you know, that you should present yourself in a way that you want to present your message. I disagree with the teacher where she had a quote saying that the men in the audience would be distracted. I mean, I think that's a little demeaning to the men that we can't focus on the message.
Yes.
But I do think there's value in presenting yourself in a situation, in clothing that meets the occasion.
Yes.
If all the other students there got the message and weren't dressed that way, then I understand why the teacher might have been instructing, because they're supposed to dress a certain way, instructing, saying, you know, you're kind of sending a message this way. Is this how you want to dress?
This reminds me of a conversation you and I had about a teacher, I think it was in an all-girls school, who maybe it was prom or something, where she really got the teacher came down on the girls for dressing a certain way. For me, this comes down to context. And I don't know that we have all the information. Did she say it in public? in front of the other students, in front of men and women. If she did, I have a problem with it.
See, but I think she did because there was a, said an international male commented that he was kind of offended.
And there, for me, lies the problem.
But if they're all there, if they're all there to learn how to present their thesis, then she's instructing all of them, hey, would you
show up this way? Yes, but she's using the case in point of a female. And what she's really referring to is a specific pair of shorts rather than so many other things that could have been said. For example, she compared it to a man who wore a cap on his head. Okay, two very different things. A guy taking off his cap
and a woman... But both inappropriate dress
in
for that situation.
So many different ways, okay? In fundamentally different ways. And I could say one has to do with societal norms around respect and wearing a hat, and the other has to do with gender bias and sexuality.
It's not gender bias if you're wearing short shorts.
And that's, just, that's a matter of opinion.
All right, so then so she's presenting herself in a way, right?
Not in her thesis. It was in the practice for her thesis.
Right. Right. Well, in a dress rehearsal, you wear the dress.
I don't know. Steve, honestly, what I would have preferred is that the teacher had pulled her aside and said to her, let's talk about what you plan
to wear. That brings me to the next subject, though. Gina Davis's Institute for Gender in the Media, which I didn't know she did this.
Right. Who
looked
knew?
At mascots. And yeah. She's looking at mascots all because she said the way something or someone appears conveys an image.
Yes, she does.
So
say
that's
that.
What happened in Cornell. What did we find with these mascots?
So, you know, you and I can walk down a shopping aisle and believe it doesn't matter. We look at all of the products. But in fact, this study found out, first of all, male mascots, and these are, we're talking about labels. You know, we all remember what happened with Aunt Jemima. Now they're giving examples that have to do with, what was the Frito-Lay, Frito-Bandito?
The Frito-Bandito, yeah.
There was the Corn Pops controversy where the one guy who appeared to be the worker who was like a cleanup guy.
The guy with skin of a color.
The guy with brown skin, things like that. So they say male mascots outnumber the female mascots 2-1. 1 in 4 of the female mascots were presented as gender stereotypes.
Okay.
Right? Female mascots were more likely to be shown as partially nude compared to male mascots. That's a little troubling. Male mascots were 7 times more likely to be shown as funny.
Let's go back to the stereotype.
Yep.
What was it? 1 in 4?
Yep, 1 in 4.
Which means 75% of the female mascots were not in a stereotype.
Yes, but that's
a big number.
Yes, except for 25% is still a big number.
Okay,
Steve.
But we have stereotypes, so should there be zero?
Yes, we should be more thoughtful. I think we're in a moment in time in which what choices we make that go out to the masses, 25% is a pretty huge number, especially when it's a choice.
How would you do a male mascot that was not a stereotype?
You don't have to make a male mascot with bulging muscles or some bro in like...
Mascots are exaggerations.
It depends in what context. I mean, look, they had the clean Mr. Clean guy who was like basically like, you know, a sexualized guy like with women who were home for the day alone cleaning.
Right, right.
But that's not
go
necessary.
Ahead, go ahead.
Do you want me to go on? Like,
let's go to the funny thing.
Uh-huh.
Male mascots are 7 times more likely to be shown as funny than female mascots. Okay, I could see where if that was flipped, people would be complaining about that, too. They're making fun of the women. They're making them all the funny mascots.
Right, except for we're just trying to say, look, let's not assume in society that the only people who can be made fun of and who are funny are guys.
I know, but if it was the women, you'd be complaining that people are making fun of women. You got to give me that one.
Okay, I can give you that
one. I appreciate that. We're out of time, I'm sorry to say.
Really?
We need more
of you. I feel so stereotyped. I feel like you got so much more time than me. 75% more time.
Actually, no, there's a man coming up who I want to spend more time with. That didn't work either.
It doesn't work.
Suzanne Muschen, the co-host of The Big Payoff. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. We all ask the question sometimes, can an old dog learn new tricks? In this case, yes. The 34-year-old Aon Center is getting its own tourist attraction, competing with the Willis Towers Sky Deck and the Hancock's Edge Experience. It's called the Sky Summit Glass Cab that hangs a group of 22 people over the edge of the 1,100-foot-tall building, overlooking Millennium Park and the south side of the city. It's an effort put in place as the city's tourism numbers see new highs. Got to keep up in the booming tourism market. And speaking of booming markets, the marijuana industry is heating up. with talk of IPOs. But for Chicago-based Green Thumb Industries, they're taking their business relations to a Canadian-based company that will execute a reverse takeover, resulting in the company's IPO. Believe it or not, Green Thumb Industries would be just the third Chicago IPO this year behind Cars.com and Byline Bank. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right, we're standing by for John Graham. He's actually the CEO of the American Society of Association Executives. So get that, a lot of associations, right? They've all got leaders, and there's an Association of Association Leaders. They've got a big show coming up in Chicago a little bit later this summer. So we hope to run that down with him in a second or so once we can connect. Gives me a chance to talk about the WGN trip we've just added to Ireland coming up late September and early October. You know, every once in a while, I'm able to get tickets to this Van Morrison concert. He does just a few shows each year at a hotel in Belfast, 350 seats. You go sit at a round table, have dinner, and then Van Morrison is the after show entertainment. And I never know until the last minute. Well, I got tickets again this year. So we're going to put up a trip and send you to Belfast to see the show. You'll go to Dublin as well. Derry, which is, I think, just a fascinating place in Northern Ireland, the Bloody Sunday site and all of that, and then also Donegal and spots in the Republic. It's a 9-day trip and departs September 30th. Dave Hoekstra from WGN Radio will be the host. Dave certainly knows music and he knows travel as well. He's written a lot about both. I know he's excited to lead everyone on it. So it departs September 30th. It's about $3,800 and you can get more information at stevebertrandtravel.com or call me 847-606-6065 or just send me an email to steve@stevebertrandtravel.com and we'll get you going there. Quick turnaround because we've got to reserve the tickets within the next 6 weeks or so. All right, on the phone line, John Graham, he's the CEO of the American Society of Association Executives. John, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Pleasure to be here.
All right, so it's kind of interesting to me, and you probably get this joke, but there's an association, right, of association leaders. What do you do?
There is an association for associations. You're correct. And what we do is we basically provide the leadership, training, and management for people who work in associations. And a lot of associations are household names that people would know, like bar associations, real estate associations, and some are more obscure, like we just were on TV with the Toy Specialty Association. So there is literally an association for every industry and profession you can think of.
Do they have
a
lot
of is to educate and train them.
I was going to say, do they have a lot in common? I mean, is there sort of a common core role in running an association?
The common core role for most associations is that they do three things. One, they advocate for their profession or industry, representing the interests of that industry. The second thing they do is they provide the training and education that people in that industry need to be successful. And the third thing they do is they set standards. Some of those standards are like medical practice guidelines. Some of those standards are the amount of steel that needs to be in a concrete bridge.
I know that you have your summer show coming up in August, which is good for Chicago because it brings people in, but it's sort of like an amoeba, right? The association spreads out into all these other associations, and if we do well here for you, then those associations may well come back to visit us in the future.
Right. We call it the Super Bowl of meetings. There'll be approximately 6,000 folks here in Chicago in August. And these are all people who plan and run meetings for their own associations. And so not only will we spend $16 million when we're here in the city for those 3 days, but in addition to that, this is an opportunity for people to see what Chicago looks like and whether they could have their meeting in Chicago. And so we project that over the next 5 to 10 years, because people plan these meetings out far in advance, that this could be at least $500 million, $500 million,
wow,
of dollars to the Chicago economy.
John Graham, the CEO of the American Society of Association Executives. Let's talk again when we get closer.
Okay, sounds good, Steve. I'll look forward to it.
You bet.
Anytime.
You bet.